There's a whole fleet of them. Look on the ASA.
My gosh.
2019 has been one heck of a year for UFO fans, and it ain't over yet.
A U.S. Navy spokesperson for the first time confirming that a series of videos made by U.S. Navy jet fighters show exactly what many theorized they did show, unidentified flying objects, or what the Navy prefers to call unidentified aerial phenomena.
In April of this year, the U.S. Navy acknowledged they were reissuing guidelines to report unidentified craft in the sky, as seen by their naval aviators. In September, the Navy then admitted directly to the Black Vault that three videos that have been the talk of the town are what they designate as unidentified aerial phenomena, or UAPs.
Oh my gosh, dude.
Wow.
Something seems to be changing on an official level, but are politicians taking this topic seriously?
But we have had people saying that they've seen things. I'm not a believer, but you know, I guess anything's possible.
Joining me today is Teresa Tindall, a state director for the Mutual UFO Network and the first female registered lobbyist on the UFO or UAP issue. Teresa will break down her efforts in Washington, D.C. to get even more awareness to this very important issue. Will the Beltway come around and pave the way for new UFO-related inquiries? Or will it be business as usual for U.S. politicians? And will they just continue the shroud of secrecy over this phenomenon? Stay tuned, as we are about to enter inside the Black Vault. That's it. We are about to step inside the Black Vault. Thank you all for tuning in, and a special thanks to my guest, Teresa. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Well, John, thank you for having me. I've been a big fan for a long time.
I appreciate that, and I know you didn't get to see it. I'm pretty excited. Those who are watching live here on YouTube got to see my introduction for you. That's a brand new thing, so for all of those who are watching live, please feel free to put into the chat room what you guys think of that. That will be the new way that we will introduce every single segment. But Teresa, again, thank you so much. I've been excited to have you on. I've read about your work and your work as a lobbyist. I know a lot of people just don't know what that is, and we'll get into all of that. But I want to first start to talk about your background. I know that you're the MUFON state director, and I know that you do some work for MUFON. So explain to everybody what exactly that does that mean.
Well, I'm the Maryland MUFON state director. I've been a Maryland, or I've been a MUFON member rather, for close to 10 years. I think it's 9 years, and I've been a field investigator for most of that time. And, you know, I think I really enjoy MUFON. It's, as most people know, it's the only, you know, civilian UFO, well, it's the largest, rather, civilian UFO reporting and investigative service, and it's global. We're in most every country. We have a database that goes back 50 years, and I'm proud to be a part of that.
And so what exactly is your job as the state director for Maryland? What do you do, and what do you try to accomplish doing that?
Well, I had a pretty big job to begin with. Maryland was kind of a dead MUFON state. The state director that was running Maryland was living in Florida at the time. You know, they were still doing cases, but they were doing them mostly from afar. And they weren't having meetings, and they hadn't had meetings for a long time. So I really had a great opportunity to resurrect a state with MUFON, and it has been just exponentially growing ever since. We started out on a small patio at on the border, and we quickly outgrew that. And now our biggest problem is finding large enough meeting space for the capacity of people that we're getting now.
Here is a little known fact. I used to be a bartender at On the Border. Not in Maryland.
Oh, really?
Yeah. way back in the day. Yeah, before I had to grow up a little bit. But yeah, funny that you said On the Border. So let me ask you.
Great margaritas.
Yeah. It's where I learned how to make. I still make margaritas. I still serve them at parties, but not for On the Border anymore. Sadly, in Southern California, they all pretty much shut down. So let me ask you, I mean, with my experience with MUFON, it's a great organization. I've been friends with them for, decades now, where I used to go to their international symposium and so on. And one thing that I learned from not only state directors and MUFON members, but those that would come to the conferences would have some kind of experience that got them to volunteer, that got them to do this work. Is that true for you? Did you have something happen to you?
I did. And that's still true for a lot of people who come to MUFON. I had an experience in my childhood when I was 10 years old. I was living in Tucson, Arizona. And it changed my life. It was, I've talked about it before. I've written about it on my blog. You know, I saw a gold disc, and that's pretty uncommon. And it didn't have lights, and it didn't do anything crazy, but it was definitely a disc, and it was metallic gold. And I watched it glide over my neighborhood on the east side of Tucson. And you know, I've spent decades thinking about that, and you know, I mean, I've considered every option. What was that? You know, was it military? And of course, Tucson is surrounded by military bases. You know, Fort Huachuca is out there. It's within flying distance of Luke and even Area 51. But I just don't see them flying experimental technology over residential neighborhoods in the daytime. I just, you know, that doesn't add up to me still. So that has been probably the biggest, it's by far been the biggest question mark of my life. You know, what was that? And I talk to people all day, every day, who have had very similar experiences, and a lot of them wind up at MUFON.
So in your opinion, having seen one, did you have more than that, by the way, or was it just the one experience?
I've had other experiences I would categorize as unusual.
Okay.
But that was the sighting of an actual UFO. And that was kind of the beginning of looking back now, a lifetime of some pretty interesting things.
Now, do you have, just to kind of pick your brain a little bit, do you have an idea of what these types of encounters are? Not only your own, but obviously the hundreds and arguably thousands that you've heard with MUFON. Do you have a consensus of what we're looking at?
Well, I think there's multiple perspectives. And it's hard to know which perspective to take. It's hard to know which perspective is right, and they're not all mutually exclusive. You know, of course, there's the religious perspective. You know, if you go back all throughout most of human history, recorded human history, people have been having encounters with something that they can't explain that affects them in a deeply profound way. And, you know, I'm sure and most of your listeners have seen all of the ancient art that seemingly depicts, you know, discs, UFOs in the sky. So there's, you know, there's the religious perspective. You know, there's the military perspective. Is it some kind of secret government program?
Yeah.
If it is, why were they flying it over a residential neighborhood in daytime, you know, where little kids are seeing this and it's changing their lives? I mean, that doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. You know, I think there are a lot of different perspectives. I don't know which one is the right one, but that's part of, you know, what is so motivating about this.
Do you lean towards one?
I think it's probably a combination of multiple things would be my guess.
Okay. So you obviously, your work then led you to being a lobbyist. And it's a word that we hear a lot about, or excuse me, something that we hear a lot about and use the word, but I kind of get the feeling a lot of people don't really know what a lobbyist does or is trying to do. Can you just kind of give a nutshell explanation of what being a lobbyist is all about?
Sure. And I'll talk specifically about what I'm doing, because I think a lot of lobbyists get you know, a bad reputation for representing interests that don't necessarily represent the people. But, you know, I am completely about representing the interests of the people here. This has, you know, this Steve Bassett was the first lobbyist. I'm the second and the first female. And my entire goal here is to represent the interests of the people. And, you know, there's a big gap between our elected representatives and the public on this issue, because there has been a stigma to talk about this. And I have spent, you know, I spend every day talking to people about these issues everywhere I go. As soon as they find out what I do, most of them have a UFO story to tell me, or some sort of experience, or a friend's experience. People are dying to talk about these issues. And I feel like part of my role as a lobbyist is to bridge that gap now between our elected representatives and what people actually want and what they're saying about these issues. And the other thing I'm finding is that a lot of our elected representatives, they've not been briefed. And so unless they've done their own research, they're in the dark also. And I think a lot of them, well, certainly some of them that that I've spoken with, feel a little resentful about that.
So just to be clear, you have to pick a topic of what you are lobbying for, right? Just to make sure that we get the basics here.
Yeah, well, yes. So okay. A lobbyist goes to Congress and represents a specific interest on the Hill to our elected representatives.
Great. So why UFOs for you? Obviously, you had a personal experience, but of all the issues on the entire planet, you chose that one to dedicate your time to. And I'm not complaining, because it's a great issue. But just on a personal level, why that one?
Well, you know, I know it's real. I mean, I personally know that this is a real phenomenon. And, you know, now we've had the Navy admit it's a real phenomenon. You know, we have a 50 years of a MUFON database with people documenting things, you know, some of which really cannot be explained. And this issue truly has the potential to change everything for the better. Mm-hmm. You know, it will change people's worldviews. You know, it will help us to understand each other better. You know, it will help us to understand ourselves better, our history better. Not to mention, there's probably a lot of technology to be gained from this that really has real world applicable purposes right now that could save lives. And I really feel like it's the most important issue, and we just need our elected officials to take it up for us.
Do you feel that they are? Like, what's the reaction on the Hill right now to this very issue?
Privately, everybody is very interested and very excited. Mm-hmm. I've had a lot of people actually reach out to me, because like I said, they some of them are feeling resentful that they've not had briefings about this, and they feel a little bit you know, caught in the dark here. So I've had a few people reach out to me for information, and they're interested. It's been pretty bipartisan, I would say. One side has expressed interest more than the other, but I think, you know, they're just as interested as everybody else. You know, they watch all of the same TV shows that we watch. They read the same books that we read. You know, they're interested. They just, you know, and obviously in DC right now, it's not the best time to try to approach something, you know, like of this magnitude as things are going on.
Do you feel, because you said privately, like, what is the problem publicly with, you brought up the Navy. The Navy is kind of coming out and saying, okay, look, the videos that you guys have been talking about in the media for the last 2 years, we consider them unidentified aerial phenomena. So it seems like it's a very real thing. And it seems like the stigma that they want to remove from UFOs may potentially be diminishing a little bit, if that's the right way to put it. I mean, of course, there's some newscasts that still have their jokes and, you know, whatever, who cares? But it seems like that's diminishing a little bit. Is there still a fear by politicians to really take on this topic?
Yeah, I think there really is, you know, because there is still that giggle factor, and it's not entirely mainstream yet. You know, we still need to get our academics on board. We still need this issue to reach, you know, a lot of people in the mainstream, even though it has, you know, TTSA has done a good job of getting it into the mainstream for the past 2 years. You know, people are understanding it's real, but, you know, politicians are very conservative. They want to be reelected, and they don't want to step on landmine issues. So, you know, I think they're kind of waiting to see, well, first of all, how things play out in DC right now. And then I think after that, you know, they're waiting to see how this evolves. And certainly in my opinion, I think it's disclosure. I mean, I think we've had disclosure. I think we're going from like a 10 to a 1. And I think that, I think we see that all around us. I think it's a process. And, you know, they may not even know about this. So part of, you know, what I'm doing is informing them about, you know, this is what's been happening for the past couple of years. This is how people are perceiving it. You know, this is what people are expecting. And so I think they kind of have a wait and see approach right now, but they're definitely interested.
So what is the other than the obvious, what is the fear? Like if a politician says, I'm going to take on this issue and I'm going to go to the press podiums and I'm going to talk about it and I'm going to push for answers. In your experience, what is wrong? Like, why can't they do that? What is the ultimate fear? Is it just being reelected, like you said? That's it?
Well, I think the biggest fear is public panic. You know, I mean, we had the, you know, everybody remembers the War of the Worlds broadcast. You know, people committed suicide over that because they thought there was a real alien invasion occurring. And I think that's the biggest fear is public panic. Yeah. So I think that that's why we're seeing a disclosure process. And I think we're definitely in the middle of that right now. And I think politicians are starting to also realize that, and it's important that they're thinking about this, and they are.
So other than communicating with the politicians, which sounds like you've been doing, can you give everyone an idea of kind of the day in the life of a lobbyist? Is this a daily thing? Is this something that you work on once a week, once a month? Like how much work is it to try and get politicians to take the UFO topic seriously?
Gosh, I work 24/7. Yeah. I mean, I have a TV show out right now, UFOs, The Lost Evidence. It aired in the US and, you know, now it's in Australia, it's in Switzerland, it's all over Europe. I get a lot of fan outreach. I try to respond to everybody because I appreciate everybody reaching out. You know, like I said, everybody has a UFO story.
Yeah.
And I'm more than happy to hear them. So I spend a lot of time doing that. I go into the office for meetings. I go into the office when I'm going to be up on the Hill. I didn't go today. It's like 100 degrees outside and 1,000% humidity, and I wasn't going to, you know, trek up to the Hill when it's that hot outside. But I spend quite a bit of time on this, and then between, you know, this and MUFON, it's more than a full-time job.
So is the lobbying work part of MUFON, or is that something you do in addition to MUFON?
I do that in addition to MUFON. So I'm not lobbying for MUFON. That's in addition to my MUFON role.
Can I pick and prod a little bit and ask, are there any specific meetings or conversations with politicians that you can name and let us know how it went?
Most of the discussions I've had have been off the record, and I don't want to violate anybody's trust. I will say I have multiple on the record requests into the offices of some people, certainly like Walker. Mm-hmm. And I'm waiting to hear back from some of those people. And, I guess that's pretty public because I've done that through their websites and stuff.
Understood. Yeah, I gotcha. So the off the record stance, do you envision by your conversations that will change soon?
Yeah, you know, I don't think, unfortunately, this isn't the number one issue on their minds right now. And I really wish it was. Mm-hmm. I think it needs to be. And I think at some point it will be. But I just take it as very encouraging that this is something that they're, you know, they're expressing an interest in. They're doing a lot of their own due diligence to learn about it. And we're having a lot of conversations. So I think that's very encouraging. I just am not sure that the timing is right now.
There's a lot of talk and speculation on the briefings that some of the senators have received earlier this year and quite possibly still going on. Obviously, they're classified, so not a lot of information is out there. But is there anything that you've learned about what they are learning in these briefings?
I don't have a security clearance, and I would never ask anybody to share classified information. So I don't know any more than most everybody else does, you know, just from the public sector. So no, I wish I had something to share.
No, I totally understand. I know by watching your work too, you've submitted a UN proposal about the topic, right?
I did.
Yeah.
So I went to the UN last year, because I was sort of expecting an announcement from the UN after everything that we saw in December of 2017 with Lou Elizondo and Tom DeLonge and the Navy. It really looked like disclosure was happening right now, and mm-hmm. I was very excited. And so I thought, well, who would make an announcement like that? So I just kind of thought that it would be the UN. I went to the UN webpage. I saw that the UN was having the annual high-level Office of Outer Space Affairs conference. And I thought, wow, well, that sounds like a perfect place for disclosure. I'm going to go and see what happens, because I really thought there was an announcement coming. So I went. There was no announcement. I met some very interesting and wonderful, great people. I learned a lot. So that was last year. But then this year, I applied to be a presenter. And so I wrote a huge paper. I mean, it's practically a dissertation. I found all of the peer review work, you know, that I could find on the subject. I have probably 40 to 60 pages. I consulted with a lot of people, especially on the physics of all this stuff. I really wanted to make sure I got it right. So I had to submit an abstract to UNUSA, the United Nations Office of Outer Space Affairs, which is in Geneva this November. And I had to submit an abstract that was 600 words or less, which it was a little hard to boil it down, but I did that. And then unfortunately today I did get word that my abstract was declined. So I will not be presenting at the UN. But as most people know, the UN has a history with this issue. I mean, Lee Spiegel, it's come up there before. So it's not new to them. I just don't know what their views are on it or how they plan to handle this.
So the end goal with that, even though it was denied, you would have been able to do a presentation to them about the topic and introduce them to what was going on, or were you seeking help from the UN? And I'm sorry for being ignorant on that. I just don't know exactly what that process is if your abstract was accepted and you were able to go.
Sure. Well, my hope, you know, the UN brings together all of the world's best scientists on, you know, various topics. And they bring them together at different conferences to, you know, go over their research and to share ideas and to, you know, set UN policy and then, you know, set policy for achieving those, you know, for achieving goals. My perspective on this was two things. The United Nations has set forth the Sustainable Development Goals to fight climate change. And, you know, it's pretty clear that whatever technology we're talking about here isn't running off of, you know, gasoline. So this is extraordinary technology, and the implications really, really could be profound. So that was my first tie into the UN, was that, you know, I believe this technology has the potential to achieve these sustainable development goals. The other goal that the UN has set is bringing space technology to benefit all of humanity. And again, You know, I'm not asking the question of whose technology this is. I don't really know that that's the most important question right now. It's interesting, but the fact remains that this technology exists. Someone is using it, and we need it. You know, so we need someone to figure this stuff out. And it appears to be space technology. It's certainly space age technology. You know, and again, let's bring high-level technology to benefit humanity, and that's another UN goal. So that's why I approached the UN about this, because I really do believe that it does fit those two goals set forth by the United Nations.
And since they did deny it, and I'm sorry to hear that, because it is an important issue on many, many levels, but what then is next? I mean, is it now more of a focus to U.S. politicians, or are there other avenues on the world stage that you can do as well?
You know, I haven't thought that far. I mean, I just put all my heart and effort into writing the paper. I mean, literally, it was like a dissertation to get, and I wanted to get it all right. You know, I mean, I had to make sure every detail was perfect. So now I have a great paper. I don't know what I'm going to do with it. I might just hold on to it and improve on it until next year and then try again. You know, I'm certainly, I have a lot going on here at home. And so I'll try the United Nations again next year.
So what's next then with U.S. politics? I know that the briefings are classified, but what's now next? Do you continue to just knock on doors and see who will talk to you? Is that kind of how the lobbying process works?
Yeah, you know, that's traditionally how it works. It's been interesting. People have been coming to me. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think that's a really good indicator to me. That, you know, politicians are willing and they're interested. They're just hesitant. And I certainly understand that. You know, my next project right now is the Disclosure Wire with Steve Bassett. We have an office now in the National Press Building downtown. And it's all set up. We're getting our video equipment together. And once we get our video equipment together, we'll be launching the first video podcast, you know, from the Capitol on the issue of exopolitics. And I talked, you know, like I said, I talked to a lot of people from all walks of life, all day, every day. When I'm in DC, you know, I talk to my Uber drivers, I talk to my bartenders, I talk to my waiters, I talk to, you know, I talk to colleagues in the press building. Everybody is incredibly enthusiastic. I mean, as soon as they find out, they want to talk to you. They want to tell stories. Everybody is just dying to talk about this issue. And I'm really looking forward to giving them an outlet in DC, you know, to be able to talk about these things.
One of the things that I've talked about on this program a couple times, and I want to ask you, is something that I very much align with To the Stars Academy on, and their stance that UAPs, whatever ultimately they are, that there is a threat narrative behind this. I consider it more of a possibility rather than saying this is a threat and, you know, making this a completely dangerous situation and topic and dire that we need to take it on. I don't go that far. But I do agree with them that there is a threat narrative around this. And it's something that is very, very serious. On a personal level, do you agree with that threat potential behind this, or do you think it's much less dangerous?
Well, that's a really difficult question. I mean, it depends on, again, it depends on what lens we're viewing this through. You know, is this human technology have we been leapfrogged? Is this foreign technology? Is this our technology? You know, is it extraterrestrial or other technology? If you take a biblical view, you know, Old Testament God was a little unhappy and did quite a bit of damage, you know. So again, it really sort of depends on what specifically we're talking about and what viewpoint you take. I do appreciate the fact that there are people thinking about that, because, you know, it's violating our airspace. It's putting people in danger. It's putting our pilots in danger. You know, people are suffering consequences from this stuff. So, you know, I do appreciate the fact that there are people who, you know, it's their job to think about those things. And I think it is important that to take every viewpoint into consideration.
You brought up the religious thing a couple times, and I want to ask you about that. I don't know if that's coming from a personal thought process of yours, or if it kind of plays into what I believe has been reported, but I haven't heard it in a while, on why ATIP was ultimately canceled and defunded, that secretive Pentagon UFO program, for those listening who aren't aware what the acronym is. The idea that was floated was that there internally was a struggle between some of the upper echelon in these agencies, or specifically the Department of Defense, that there was religious implications digging into this phenomena. Do you agree with that? I mean, is that what you have maybe run across in these off the record, and you don't have to name names, but these off the record conversations? Is there a religious aspect to the politicians and the government?
Oh,
not to put you on the spot.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to speak for anybody. But I think that would certainly make sense. If that's really what we're talking about here, if we're really talking about extraterrestrial life, it would certainly make sense that that's going to have huge implications for most of the world's religions and people's, you know, spiritual practices. And that could be very destabilizing for some people. It could be very motivating and reinforcing for others. But I could certainly see there being some pushback, you know, in DC, if that's truly the case. So, you know, I also heard that, you know, I think it was on Unidentified, I think is where I heard that.
Yeah, I think it was, yeah, and I believe they had it on there. I think it was first, and anybody in the chat or you as well can correct me if I'm wrong, I think it was first reported by George Knapp well before Unidentified aired. Mm-hmm. And then, but again, it's that's the consensus. And I just have always struggled with that notion, just because I don't really see in government documents and programs that I go after, doesn't mean anything, but I just don't see that there has been a religious apprehension for certain programs. And that's why I was kind of curious if you've gotten that vibe in the conversations that you've had, that religion plays a role in handling these topics.
Well, I think, you know, that probably isn't something that would necessarily be documented, because we're talking about people's personal beliefs. And certainly people's personal beliefs and your worldview, it shapes how you respond to new information. And so I don't think it's unreasonable to assume that there are people, you know, inside the Beltway with very strong personal views one way or another that does, you know, shape how they feel about certain issues. And, you know, I think that's probably what they've been grappling with for the past 70 years. Mm-hmm. Is, you know, how do we subtly break this to people, you know? And I don't envy the person who has that job, because I'm sure that's quite stressful to think about.
Yeah. And let's segue into the topic of disclosure and whether or not the government would come clean or admit to something. You had said earlier that you felt that that was potentially happening, which is what motivated you to do the UN proposal. Do you still feel that this is a somewhat slow trickle disclosure, or have you put that aside and said, oh, well, maybe not really?
No, absolutely. 100%. I do feel that this is a slow trickle disclosure. I mean, just this afternoon, you know, we had the announcement from the JPL laboratory that they found the building blocks of, basically the building blocks of life. I would have to look at the article again to be more specific on one of, one of the moons of Saturn. Yeah. Enceladus.
Yeah, Enceladus.
Yeah, yeah. And then just a couple days ago, we had Dr. Green from NASA, you know, the head of the Planetary Science Division. And, you know, it was very funny wording in some of the articles, but, you know, they said that they were probably going to be announcing the discovery of microbial extraterrestrial life on Mars. But what I found odd is, how can you say that if you don't know it already exists? you know? So I do, you know, I have a friend, Matt Tiller, and he made what I'm calling the Tiller scale. And I think it's actually really good. It goes from 1 to 10 with, you know, 10 being extraterrestrial life does not exist. It's never been here. That's it. And 1 being, you know, extraterrestrial life exists and it has visited us. Most people fall somewhere in the middle. But, you know, if you really keep that scale in mind and you read the news every day, you can just kind of see them walking us down that scale, you know, to where, well, there might be alien life, to, well, there might be water, to, well, we might have found microbial life. Well, we've probably found microbial life, and now we've found life building blocks. So we really feel like we're being walked down the Tiller scale, you know, to, yes, extraterrestrial life exists. It's probably visited here before. It's probably intelligent and very highly evolved.
So is that a personal feeling of yours, that that will be the disclosure, that the extraterrestrials have been visiting Earth for a very long time? Do you think that that is ultimately what will be disclosed?
You know, I've got a couple, I have a couple of schools of thought on that. You know, I have a scientific background, so it's hard for me to say, yes, that's where it's going, that's what's happened, you know, because we don't have necessarily, or we're not recognizing necessarily, the scientific evidence to support that. However, you know, when you critically think about all of the world's religions, you know, all of the mythologies of so many people, you know, across time and around the globe, these people were describing very similar events that were highly significant to them. And then I think back to my own experience and I think something is happening here, you know, and science really needs to catch up. It either needs to be proven or disproven, but it needs to be acknowledged.
Sounds like the acknowledgement is there. Hopefully science will catch up. It's really weird, though, with science. I don't know if you feel the same way. It's like in January of 2019, we hear this big reveal, and it's some kind of big advancement in space and this and that. And then it, like, goes away for a couple years. And then a couple years later, it's like we hear the same headline again and then make the same discovery, like the microbial life. I thought we've already heard that, but I don't know. Maybe I'm just crazy. Like, I just feel like science forgets sometimes these big headlines. And I'm not talking about British tabloid headlines. I'm talking about, right, like, actual scientific discoveries. And then a couple years go by, you don't hear anything. Then it's like you hear the same headline again. It's like, wait a minute, don't you guys remember? Like, you already ran this headline. I don't know if you feel the same way about that, though. But
no, I mean, there's, you know, there are definitely patterns in ufology. And, you know, a lot of the old timers are say, well, yeah, I've seen this all before. It's nothing new. And, you know, maybe they're right. This time, though, I think it will be different. And I'm sure they've heard that before, too. But I think it's just going to have to be different. You know, Jan Harzan, the director for MUFON, he gave a really interesting talk to state directors when I was at the annual MUFON meeting in Irvine. One of the points that he brought up was that, you know, we're going to be most likely interstellar, an interstellar species within about 30 years. What will we discover then? You know, and I am sure with all of the billions of stars, billions of galaxies, billions of Goldilocks zones, that there is other life out there. So I really think Jan Harzan is right, you know, that the time to begin preparing people for our future discoveries is now. That's really only one generation away.
And let me just make sure I heard you correctly. He says we're interstellar in how many years?
He said about 30 years that we'll be interstellar.
Like travel out of, I'm surprised to hear that, travel out of our solar system?
Well, it blew me away too, I know. But yeah, so that's what he said.
Interesting.
And yeah,
I'd see that's what's fascinating to me in the cosmic sense, is that it doesn't matter if it's 30 years or 3,000 years, as long as humanity doesn't wipe itself off the planet, we will eventually venture out there and we will achieve that. But 30 years, I'm surprised to hear that timetable. That's pretty quick.
Well, yeah, I was shocked by that too. That now you know you see why I remembered that number, because that's just one generation away. You know, are you talking to your children about this? Because, you know, they'll most likely, they'll see space, and certainly their children, if we don't destroy ourselves before then. So, you know, there's a lot to look forward to, and we need to begin, you know, changing our worldview and our paradigms to prepare for that, because these are big, big changes, and, you know, they really influence every part of society.
I think I'm going to have to reach out to Jan and invite him on the show, because I'd be curious to pick his brain on where he gets that timetable, not to challenge him, but rather just kind of explore with him why he feels that way. I've always enjoyed talking to Jan, so I'll have to do that. For those that are watching live, you can text in questions. I've got quite a few that are coming in here. If you are listening live, feel free to text in your questions for Teresa. I'll be getting to them in just a couple of minutes. The number to do that is 661-888-2568. Again, 661-888-2568. No toll-free call-in line this time. I need to test to make sure that callers can hear Teresa and vice versa, and I don't want to do this as a guinea pig here on this particular program. So just text messages. I'm sorry, guys. The chat room, I will try and get to you, but make sure, if you can, text those messages in. So disclosure, back to that, since we're talking about timetables a little bit, slow trickle disclosure, we're seeing a little bit, the military's kind of come around and so on. Do you have and I know it's conjecture, but do you speculate at all on how long it will take to get to the end of the disclosure process? Meaning, how long do we have to wait for, if you do feel that the government will quote unquote come clean, how long do we have to wait for that, do you think?
Boy, I wish I knew that number. You know, I think we're going to have to wait for that until politicians realize that there's so much public support and public outrage, you know, about this, that they have to respond. You know, I think we're going to have to force our politicians to respond to us. That's what they should be doing anyway. That's why we elect them, you know, so they need to be answering our questions. And so I think the more pressure we put on them, the sooner we'll get to the bottom of whatever is going on here. And I'm certainly working, you know, really hard to try to make that happen. Obviously, there's a lot going on in D.C. right now, and things might have to calm down a little bit before anybody focuses on anything else. But certainly this issue needs to be taken up pretty immediately. And, you know, and I don't know what kind of timetable anybody else is working on. I'm not aware of, you know, sort of an end date or, you know, what sort of timetable, you know, the officials are working on. I wish I knew that.
So one chat question, I think we might jump around here a little bit. One chat question, and I'm sorry, I lost the username here. I think I know the answer to this, but they were asking if your lobbying is officially and legally registered. So are you a legally registered lobbyist for this?
Yes, I am. And you can look that up in the database. And yes,
I figured as much, but
Senate and congressional lobbying number, and it's official.
Great. Perfect. So that was the chat room. So here's some of the text messages that have come in. Figured this particular person's been following you maybe a little bit. I don't, and maybe they're wrong, but I believe you lived in Phoenix, by the way, that this was, that you lived in Arizona. Did you see the Phoenix lights, or do you have any updates on that?
You know, I lived in Tucson. I never lived in Phoenix. And I actually left Arizona the month before the Phoenix lights occurred. So I'm so sorry. I don't have any information on the Phoenix lights.
No problem. Instead of a soft disclosure, this comes in from Scott. Hey, Scott, thanks for texting in. John, could you ask Teresa if she believes that we are any closer to any type of disclosure, not a soft disclosure, but something like a press conference? I know we touched upon that a little bit, but do you think that press conference of disclosure is close? Not a soft disclosure or slow trickle, but do you think that press conference is nearby?
Well, Scott, thank you for the question. You know, I saw a video today, and it was President Medvedev of Russia. It was Vladimir Putin's predecessor. And he was, it's actually on my Twitter feed and you can see it and I can repost it. I'm actually going to write about this. You know, and the video shows him, or it's translated with him discussing aliens. Now, I need to do more research on this. You know, is this real? Is that really what he said? Was he joking? Did he mean that? Because if that's the case, we've already had disclosure by the head of a state and people just didn't notice. So yeah, I have to do more research on that for one. Two, it may have already occurred and we didn't notice. You know, and it seems like every country is handling this differently. Certainly I would like to see, you know, the president of the United States or the head of the UN, I would like to see, and most people would like to see an official statement. What is our policy on the existence of extraterrestrial life? It exists or it doesn't. And I think everybody is expecting some sort of statement on that eventually.
You bring up an interesting point. A disclosure happened and we just missed it. That's a really interesting way to put it, simply because do you feel that that actually is the way that it's gone? Because I would actually believe that what we know and what we understand to be true, largely, not for me because I talk bad about them all the time, but the media, I feel, just does not give this topic the correct attention. Now, we're coming off of a huge viral story, so now doesn't seemingly seem like the time to bring that up. But I think that it was a flashy headline for a lot of news agencies, and the story has passed. I would want the media to take it to the next level. And I complimented Time Magazine, and I'll do it again here. They took what I had received from the Navy, went to the Navy, and built off of it. And to me, that was some of the best journalism that I saw in the last 2 weeks, where then they pushed to get Joseph Gradisher at the Navy to go a little bit farther. Now, why am I bringing this up? The media does not give this topic the attention it deserves, which then ultimately could lead to disclosure. Do you feel that the media plays a role here in not only educating the public, but potentially pushing for, again, disclosure and politicians to take up this and push for answers and ultimately do that press conference that Scott was asking about?
Yes, you know, absolutely. And the media has always treated this, you know, with the giggle factor and, you know, tinfoil hats and all of that. But, you know, this is really an issue of national security. You know, it's not funny. It really changes lives. People are deeply affected by this. And, you know, the media, I think there's a big generational difference too. You know, what I've noticed in talking to a lot of people is that a lot of the younger generations, you know, possibly Gen X and, you know, definitely the younger people, they're not watching television news. I don't watch television news anymore. I just don't. And a lot of people, a lot of, you know, the younger generations don't. You know, they get their information from Twitter. They get their information from Instagram. And I think, you know, if the media doesn't want to take this up, that's fine. There are plenty of other people who are willing to fill that vacuum, and people will get information however they're going to get information. If the media, the mainstream media, wants to get left behind, you know, that's just a discredit to them. And, you know, it has been very exciting to see, you know, all of these headlines over the past 2 years. But like you said, how many have really dug deep on these issues and really teased out all of the issues involved with this? They've done some splashy headlines, but nobody has done a deep dive. And that's really what we need to get people to take it seriously.
I totally agree. I applaud you on that, because it's I call it copy and paste journalism, you know, that you may rarely have, like a Time Magazine, that did great journalism, but they built off of it. A lot of the copy and paste journalism, the outlets just take story X from here and story Y from there, and they just kind of jumble the words and make it their own so it's not plagiarism, and they put it out there, and it's such a shame. With social networking, I always love picking people's brains on this because I'm always curious. Do you believe that social networking has helped or is helping the UFO topic, hurting it, or are you neutral on it?
Well, you know, I think it's a double-edged sword. You know, social networking is it brings immense possibilities for everything and everybody, you know? So it's like any powerful tool, it's all in how you use it.
You think it's being used good or bad?
Well, I guess it depends on who you...
I gotcha. This question in from Zach. Hey, Zach, ask Teresa if she thinks Elon Musk knows the truth. And he's got a smiley emoji in there. And moreover, if she thinks aerospace companies have to vet anomalous phenomenon they observe through the DOD. So first part of that question, Elon Musk and even all the titans in the corporate world, do you think that they are a little bit more read in than the general public?
Well, thank you, Zach, for the question. You know, we all heard, well, we all probably saw Elon Musk go on the record just a couple weeks ago and say, you know, there is no extraterrestrial life. If there was, I would know about it. Well, you know, I don't know that that's necessarily true. And, you know, we had Bob Bigelow, you know, go on 60 Minutes. And what was that, just last year, you know? And yeah. She, you know, he said, extraterrestrial life exists. I have no question about it. It's right under our noses. So I do expect that some of these guys know this. And I would expect that that's some of the motivation for disclosure. Because, you know, once we start sending tourists to space, they're going to come back with some very interesting questions. And so we have, like, you know, like I said, it's about preparing people for what, you know, for the future. And so I would expect that a lot of them would know. And, you know, I can't speak for Elon Musk.
He's watching. He won't mind. Well, here's another question that I would have for you is, do you think that there's a big possibility that disclosure could potentially come from the private sector, that everybody has always been into the U.S. government and the military to give us the answers, that disclosure has to come from them, that UFO, that's the whole proverbial land on the White House lawn thing. But with the corporate world reaching out to the edges of space now and arguably taking the lead, and that's a whole different show in itself, but arguably taking the lead, do you think that the corporate world is going to be the one to reveal this and disclose to the world, we are not alone, and it's not the media that's left behind, it's the U.S. government and even world governments? You think that's possible?
I don't see why they would do that. I don't see why that would be in their job description. I don't see why that would benefit them. So no, I don't see, I don't necessarily see, you know, private, and I could be wrong, you know, but I don't necessarily see that in their purview. You know, I really think that public education is a part of that. It falls under NASA. You know, they should be educating people about these things. You know, part of this falls under, you know, it's the government that has to answer to the citizens. It's not necessarily private corporations. And if we demand answers, they need to answer us.
It's interesting that you say it that way. I'm wondering, and I'll ask you if you think that this is a possibility, if there is truth to the whole extra, and I believe that there is, but I mean, if there's truth to the whole extraterrestrial presence out there, maybe they're not in our own atmosphere, but they see them. Do you feel the corporate world is being, briefed isn't the right word, but maybe asked to exercise discretion on what they come out with? And a quick scenario would be Elon Musk goes up there. He stretches a little bit farther than where he's gone now. He sees, captures something that's traversing through our solar system. Do you think the government has intervened and said, hey, look, if you see something like that, it is considered classified. Keep it to yourselves and report it to us. Do you find that would be maybe what they're dealing with? The corporate environment, that is.
You know, it would just be purely speculation because I can't say for certain, but, you know, it would make sense to me that that would be part of a non-disclosure agreement if you're going to be working on, you know, technology that might reveal classified things. You know, certainly part of a non-disclosure agreement would be to not reveal some of those classified things.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think that's entirely reasonable.
All right, a couple more minutes left with you, and I've got a couple more questions from the audience. Here's one. We've heard from the Navy, but what about the Air Force? Has any of your lobbying moved to that question?
That's a very good question, because I come from an Air Force family myself, and I want to hear from the Air Force, damn it. So, yeah, we have heard from the Navy, and I would like to see the Air Force make a statement. You know, why aren't the other services getting behind what the Navy has said? Why is there this giant silence? And certainly that's, you know, part of some questions that I have also.
Here's Chris Bales. You mentioned on Twitter, Teresa, this is obviously your Twitter account, I believe. You mentioned on Twitter that the Wilson documents are being submitted to Mark Walker. Why these documents? Why do you think they are legit? Why not MJ-12 instead?
So that was going back to a comment that somebody had made about the Wilson documents, because I had submitted a meeting request to Mark Walker, and somebody said, well, you need to take the Wilson documents with you. And that is, you know, those are part of the documents that I intend to either leave with his office or take to him in person when I get a meeting with him, because, you know, even if those documents, you know, I believe those documents are real, but even if they are not real, our elected officials need to know what's out there. They need to know what's in the public realm. They need to know what people are seeing, because they need to be able to respond appropriately. So yes, those are some of the documents I would take. You know, they're very recent.
Do you, I know it's a loaded question. Is there something that sticks out to you in brief about those documents that tell you that they're real? Or is it more about the implications about them possibly being real, which is why you're disseminating them?
You know, I think it's pretty interesting to have those documents and then to look back on some of the history, you know, that is very well documented, especially with Dr. Greer. You know, these documents really seem to back up a lot of what Dr. Greer has been saying for years, you know, and unless this is really well orchestrated, you know, they seem to be backing each other up, you know, and again, it's impossible to prove if they're real or it's fake. The important thing is that they're out there and they're, you know, they're influencing people. And certainly our representatives need to know that.
Very good. I only have a couple more minutes with you. I know that there is in your neck of the woods at the University of Maryland, a panel discussion coming up in the next few weeks. Do you care to talk about that?
Yes, I'm very excited about that. So, you know, in Maryland, I'm sorry, my phone is blowing up, but
that's
I don't
okay.
know if you can hear that. I'm so sorry.
No, that's all right.
So in Maryland, we have a lot of very exciting things going on. And the University of Maryland art director, Terrace Matla, he has put together a discussion panel on the phenomenon. And so that's going to be October 22nd at the University of Maryland Art Gallery, I believe. You can look it up, and I've posted it on Twitter multiple times. He's going to be having Brian Bender from Politico. He has the UVA astronomer, and I believe she was interviewed for Scientific American on this subject. And then he also has another academic from University of Maryland. And it's a discussion panel. The public is welcome. And I'm just very excited to see academia, you know, finally taking this subject seriously and seeing it as a subject that's worthy of real academic discussion.
Very good. Well, Teresa, I can't thank you enough for joining me and telling my audience about what the lobbying work is that you're doing. I wish you the best of luck. I'm sorry to hear about the UN proposal, but hopefully that doesn't get you down too bad. I mean, we need you on our team, so I appreciate you doing all of that hard work.
Well, thank you, John, and thank you for everything you do, too. The Black Vault is great. It's one of the best resources the public has. And it's a great service that you do.
Well, you're very sweet to say that. Thank you very much. And thank you all for listening. This is John Greenwald Jr. signing off. We'll see you next time.